Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
You know, I think one of my favorite things is to hear a piece of football history about an individual maybe that I've never heard of before. I'm sure you share the same thing. Well, Timothy P. Brown of footballarchaeology.com joins us today to tell us about an amazing, almost Forrest Gump-like figure of early football. That story I think you're really going to enjoy. Stay tuned. Hello, my football friends. Welcome to the Pig Pen. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. And once again, we have our weekly visit with Timothy P. Brown of footballarchaeology.com. Tim, welcome back to the Pig Pen.
Hey, Derek. Good to see you again. Looking forward to talking. And I believe this story is going to be gold, Jerry. Gold.
Gold, Jerry, gold. All right. Well, I'm sure that
could be gold, Darren gold, you know, but I'm just working off the Seinfeld routine.
Okay. I got you. Now I got the Seinfeld reference. Now I got it. I was trying to fit it into your story. But that's somehow segueing into our Tim's recent tidbit that he wrote, titled Eddie Egan, College Football Player and Summer and a Winter Olympian. What can you tell us about Eddie Egan, Tim?
Yeah. So, you know, I published this one in January, so just prior to the Winter Olympics. So it's just kind of an oddball story. Doesn't have a tremendous amount to do with football, but enough. So there's this guy, Eddie Egan. He grew up in Colorado, and I think he must have come from some level of wealth, but he also, like, maybe on his parents' ranch or something, you know, supposedly he used to fight some of the cowhands. You know, that was kind of the story, whether it's true or not. You know, box. So he ends up, and he's living, you know, he ends up at University of Denver, in either for the 1915 or 1916 football season. And so he plays there as a freshman. But then World War I breaks out, so he joins the military. Now, somewhere in there, but it's so before he joined the military, he had won the Rocky Mountain AAU Middleweight Championship in boxing. You know, so obviously he's a pretty tough guy. You know, I had to be a pretty, you know, pretty decent athlete to be a boxer and, you know, playing football. And, you know, Denver had, you know, pretty good football teams back then. So, so he ends up joining the Army. And so, you know, then there's stories in the newspaper about him because, you know, he was middleweight champ and then he's going to box in the Army and stuff. But he never ships overseas. You know, that's just kind of the way it worked out with him. And then he entered Yale. He got discharged and he enters Yale in January of 1919. So instead of going back to Denver, and because he had been in the military during the war, he was eligible to participate in what they called the Inter-Allied Games, which was it was kind of like a mini Olympics, but it was only for men. And it was only men who served in the military during World War I. So it was held, you know, basically in Paris. But they, you know, they had all kinds, you name it, you know, all kinds of sports. So he goes over there and he wins the championship in the Inter-Allied Games. But he then comes back to Yale for the fall of 1919 and goes out for football. And I mean, best as I can tell, he was on the team for a couple of years, and I know he got into some games because, you know, I find his name in like the substitution, you know, list. So he played, but he wasn't like some big football player. And then in 1920, he goes to Paris again for the 1920 Olympics, and he wins a gold medal, wins a middleweight, you know, title. He comes back to Yale and starts the boxing program. So before that, you know, they must have had it as kind of like an intramural sort of thing or club, but he gets it going as a varsity sport. And interestingly, one of the guys who later coaches the boxing team at Yale is Gerald Ford, who becomes, you know, U.S. president. He went to law school at Yale and was an assistant football coach and was the boxing coach while he was there. So then this Egan guy, he graduates, is a Rhodes Scholar. So he goes to, you know, goes to England, gets a PhD in law, comes back and becomes a successful U.S. lawyer. So, you know, he's just living the life and, you know, living in New York City. And kind of everything's just like a normal, influential, rich guy life. But then in 1932, one of his buddies, who was the captain of the Olympic bobsled team, the four-man team, ends up losing one of his pushers shortly before the Olympics, because the guy was qualified for like two-man or individual or, you know, whatever. So then the so this guy says, hey, can you, you know, knowing this guy's pretty strong and whatever, hey, can you join my team and be a pusher? So here's a guy, he's never, he may not have ever seen a bobsled before, but he ends up on the Olympic team and at Lake Placid, and they win the gold. So he's a guy, you know, I just think it's so funny that here's this guy who, you know, was a college football player, you know, real good program, but he was, you know, Olympic gold. He actually was in the 24 Olympics as a boxer too, but got knocked out fairly early on. And then he ends up winning an Olympic gold. So he's the only guy who has won gold medals in the Winter and Summer Olympics in separate events. There was, I want to see either a guy or a woman, I'm not sure, that won in the 1920 Olympics, like figure skating was a summer sport. So somebody won figure skating gold in 20 and then 24 and 28 when it was winter. So they're officially gold medalists for both, but he's the only one who's done it for two distinct sports. So then just one other, you know, weird thing about him is, so after World War II, he had done some kind of administrative, you know, work during World War II, something with the air transport. And so he ends up, the guy, Robert Ripley from Believe It or Not, he had arranged to fly commercial flights on Pan American Airways and to try to set the world's record for fastest guy circumnavigating the globe on commercial flight. So, and then he gets sick right before it happens. So Egan takes his place. And so he flies. He sets a world record for circumnavigating, which today you could do, you know, probably within a day, right?
Right.
But it took 147 hours for him at the time.
Yeah, so anyway. Egan's a real Johnny on the spot. He fills in for bobsled team, fills in for Ripley.
I mean, there's not many people who can claim to have, you know, meddled in boxing and, you know, shows. He's like, hey, why don't you ask Ken?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's a lot of amazing things about that. But sit here and think about what they're doing over in Europe. So 1919, they have this, and I know it's not the spectacles it is today, but to have a major world competition in, you know, France a year after the war is done, and then 2 years after hosting Olympics, I mean, that's got to be a pretty tall task for those folks to have to do.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, so like back then, I don't think people were even like building new facilities for the Olympics at the time. And there were so far fewer events, right? So it may not have been as big a deal. And I think just from a logistics standpoint and infrastructure, but, you know, I think for them, it was like, you know, this just shows that we're, you know, we're back to peacetime, you know, we're going strong, you know, whatever, you know, that kind of.
You still got to have a place for athletes to stay and everything. And you think about Egan, you know, he's back and forth from where I'm sure they didn't have air travel back when he did it. So he went across the Atlantic by boat, you know, three times in what, 3 years?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just one of those weird stories. It's just, I watch like the bobsledding when it's on, right? But otherwise, I mean, it just, I know they train hard and they, you know, select these athletes, but yeah, you know, and they still have the pusher types, right?
Yeah.
But just the idea of like, hey, are you available? And you're on the Olympic team, you know?
Yeah. Well, there have been some famous like football players. Like, didn't Herschel Walker push for bobsled team one year? So. Yeah. Some other football players, I think, have done it too. So interesting. He must have been the first. He's a trendsetter.
He was. And then I don't think anybody else did it for quite some time. But
right.
old Eddie did. And he actually, they ended up in the 80s, like 80s or 90s, they put out a postage stamp, you know, with him.
Oh, amazing. Wow, that is an amazing story, Tim. And you seem to find these little, you know, you call them your tidbits. They're these little trinkets through history that we can't appreciate because nobody remembers a guy who did this, you know, over 100 years ago. But you do this quite often in your tidbits. Maybe you could share with people where they could find more of your information you put out.
Yeah, just so my website, it's a Substack, footballarchaeology.com. Just go there. You know, either just bookmark it and come whenever you want, or subscribe, which allows you to, which means you're going to get an email from me every time there's a new story, and then the email includes the story itself. So, and then you know, I've got my author page on for my books and all that kind of stuff, which is, you know, just look me up and you can find it.
All right. Amazing stuff as always, Tim. We really appreciate you coming on and sharing this tidbit of football history. And we'd love to talk to you again next week.
Very good. Look forward to it.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.